So I work at the Center for Urban Research at the City University of New York Graduate Center, and I run a project there called the CUNY Mapping Service. And we use computer mapping technology, geographic information systems, or GIS, to help all sorts of organizations, other CUNY researchers, et cetera, figure out how to map their information and understand spatial relationships and spatial patterns in their data. And so with the census, that's a huge issue, and it's a huge benefit to try to understand where what the concentrations are of populations and use that for planning purposes, for analysis, for understanding neighborhood change, real estate, you name it. So what I'm going to talk about tonight, and it's a little faded to see with the light, but is that all right? is an interactive application. It's nationwide, as you can see. Maybe we'll focus in on the New York aspects of it. But the in 2000, the Census Bureau did an analysis, or they tracked the participation in the census by census tract. A tract is about 2,500 people on average, and in New York City it occupies probably a neighborhood or two. And they did this analysis to try to understand where participation rates were low and what populations, what subpopulations, I guess, of the overall population didn't participate as much. And they came up with what they called a hard-to-count index. And we'll see that, let's see if the map works here. What they did is they looked at 12 different characteristics, tract by tract, across the country. There are about 66,000 tracts nationwide. And they looked at what they believe, what the Census Bureau believes, are the major indicators of why people didn't participate as well as they could have. Renter-occupied units, non-husband-wife households, complex households, recent movers, language isolation, unemployment, poverty, lower education levels, multifamily housing, things like that. And they assigned a hard-to-count score, basically, to all the tracts in the country. So for 2010, the Census Bureau and a variety of other organizations, including Howard's and others around the country, are using that information to try to make sure that we boost participation, we have the highest participation possible in the 2010 census. Howard's going to talk about why that's important. I'm sure you all have a sense of that, but it'll give you, you know, some good background on why that's critical and what is being done about that in general as far as outreach campaigns and outreach strategies. But what we did, working with a set of private philanthropic foundations called the Funders Census Initiative, is we put together this interactive application where any group, whether it's an official census complete count committee or any other organization, could use the map to try to plan their outreach strategy and their educational efforts and their media campaigns to try to really focus on the so-called hard-to-count areas and hard-to-count populations. The reason we did this is that a lot of the maps that you'll see, I'll give you an example. This is actually, this is, let's see here. A lot of the maps we zoom in. Oh, come on. So a lot of the maps that you see use the actual hard-to-count scores to show where the hard-to-count population is. So here you can see that, and we did this for this map, obviously, the light yellow areas have a hard-to-count score of 60 to 70 or so. The hard-to-count scores overall range from 0 to about 130. And what we did is we said, all right, any area that has a score of above 60 would be considered so-called hard-to-count. That's the top 20% of the tracts nationwide. And then progressively darker colors to show harder and harder to count. But that doesn't give you, that is limited in a couple of ways. It doesn't show you population density. So you could be looking at a hard to count area that's very hard to count with very few people. So you want to get the biggest bang for your buck as far as outreach efforts. It doesn't tell you why that area is hard to count, so it doesn't give you any information about the characteristics that went into the analysis, and it doesn't allow you to, you know, get the information for yourself to do your own analysis. So that's what this mapping application hopefully overcomes. So we did a couple of things. We enabled you to, I'll just zoom back out for a second. You can see hard to count patterns by county, and the percent of each county's population that's considered hard to count. You could see it by metropolitan area. And then again, for each of these levels of geography, why these areas, or what the hard to count population, what the characteristics are, the percent renter occupied of the hard to count population, the language isolation characteristics, with little tips about why each of these things is important as you're thinking about your campaign strategy. And then on down the line, unemployment. So this gives you kind of a regional picture, especially if you're an organization that's planning media buys in a variety of areas. It gives you a sense of not only where to focus your efforts, but how to structure your campaign, whether it's more targeted towards needing bilingual materials or more targeted towards lower education characteristics and the like. But then again, you can zoom in to the local, whatever local area you want around the country. We'll look at the city, obviously, and see the detailed characteristics by census tract. Let's look at Brooklyn, actually. So this is, you know, the north part of Brooklyn. Big chunk of it is hard to count. But then when you start looking at the characteristics, actually, let's look at language isolation. You can see pretty stark contrasts in some of the patterns. So some of the areas you wouldn't need bilingual materials as much as you would in other areas. And then you can click on each tract. A small screen, so hopefully we can see all of this. And for each tract in the country, we give you detailed information, what the hard to count score is, what the return rate or the participation rate was in 2000, and then links to other more detailed information from the census website itself, and then detailed statistics for each tract. So we can get a sense, if we scroll down a little bit, so there are almost 4,000 people on this tract, 1,400 of them in poverty, about 1,000 with no high school education. And then looking at the households, about 1,000 households, gives you a sense of the language isolation characteristics. So for the 30% or so households linguistically isolated, the vast majority of those speak a Spanish language. Smaller percent speak an Asian or Pacific Islander language. Unfortunately, we didn't have more detailed information, more better ways to, you know, slice and dice the data, as it were. So the Census Bureau provided it in these kind of broad categories, but nonetheless, it gives you sort of a good first-cut analysis about how you would then prepare your outreach strategy. Let's look at the Jackson Heights area so you can get a sense of poverty and unemployment, not as much of a concern as perhaps some areas down in Brooklyn. And then for each tract, we also give you the ability to show the total population within each of these characteristics per tract. So, you know, so here, if you're planning your outreach campaign, even though, let's say, these tracts up here might be hard to count, total population is not as much as down along here. The size of the circle indicating the total population. And then, again, for each of the characteristics, what the what the population is within each of these categories. So total population in poverty, or households that are receiving public assistance. Then we also provide some other pieces of information. So again, you can get a much better sense about before you even go on the ground, as it were, to do a door-to-door campaign or a phone campaign, get a better sense of the lay of the land. You can overlay zip codes, so you can get a sense of if you're doing a campaign by zip code or you're doing a phone campaign and you have your phone numbers plotted by zip code, you can get a sense of where to focus your efforts. By congressional district, if you're planning to do any outreach to members of Congress. We also highlight, this is maybe not as much of a concern in some parts of the city, although I guess in this area a little bit, recent foreclosure risk. The HUD, Housing and Urban Development Agency at the federal level, did an analysis also by census tract nationwide where they looked at foreclosure starts as a percent of total mortgages in 2007 and the first half of 2008. And so the percentage of those gives you a sense of how bad the foreclosure risk is, tract by tract. And it's helpful, as we were planning the site and working with census advocates, to include information like this because it's, number one, more recent than the 2000 vintage data that we used to show the color-shaded maps there. That's all based on the 2000 census information. So it's more recent information, gives you a sense of the recency of the household flux and turmoil. And it also gives you a sense of, again, how to sort of triangulate your campaign. Or, you know, are you going to be focused on areas that have more stable housing patterns or not as much? And then we also provide the actual, so these red hashed areas, hash marked areas, represent census tracts with low participation rates in the 2000 census. And it's interesting that even though the Census Bureau did this hard-to-count analysis, which was supposed to be predictive, or should be predictive, of what the participation is going to be in 2010, when you look at the actual participation rates, well, let's look at this area in Queens. So along the Grand Central up here, relatively low, less than 60% participation in 2000 census, but just right over here, an area where is relatively hard to count, much higher participation rates. And actually, if we click on each tract, we can get that information. So this is 69%. 72%, much higher than the citywide average, which actually, Howard, do you remember that offhand? It was probably 50 or... 50. And actually, some areas, huge swaths of Southeast Queens, are not considered hard to count based on the Census Bureau's analysis, but nonetheless had relatively low participation rates in 2000, and so we'll see what happens in 2010. But again, we added this information so that people, organizations planning their outreach, could use all this different, all these different types of information to figure out where to focus their campaigns and what type of strategy to use.
Can I ask?
Yeah, sure.
Like, for instance, if you want to identify certain group, for instance, public housing, university, public housing development, so how can we fit in that, you know, to know how, you know, what the situation status of how they can, you know, among the public housing residents? Or, on the other hand, there may be subsidized housing like Section 8.
Right.
So how can we have a, you know, a better picture of that?
Well, we didn't include that information here. Very important in New York City and maybe a couple of other urban areas. It's a nationwide application, so we wanted to. It's one of the things that we weren't able to include. However, I should point out that the mayor's office has a Census 2010 project, and here's their website, and they provide a number of maps, including the 2000 census response rate by public housing site. Let's see if that opens up. So you can see for whatever census tract includes public housing, where the participation rates, what they were.
And this from the mayor's office?
That's from the mayor's office. So yeah, that's accessible online. You could get that information. So you'd have to kind of look at that at the same time as you're looking at the other map, but it still gives you that information. And then one last thing to highlight, turn this off. So how many people use Twitter? Couple? Okay. I use it. So, this type of social networking and people, for whatever reason, wanting to publicize online what they're doing, what they're thinking, what they're talking about, we thought this would be a good way, kind of a neat and interesting way, but also hopefully very substantive and useful way of enabling people interested in census outreach to try to find where people are located who are posting information on Twitter about the census. So when you click on the Twitter tab, we filter the list for anything with the word census or census 2010 in it. And you can see actually where people were when they actually either had their hand held or they're sitting at home online and typing, the message on Twitter. And it serves a couple of purposes. So this person here, check out and participate in Brian Lehrer's 10 Questions account show. A lot of news outlets post all of their information to Twitter. So if you're an organization trying to plan your outreach efforts and you see a whole bunch of news items appear in a particular part of the region that you're focused on, you can immediately contact that reporter or talk to or locate people that might be part of a nonprofit organization or a housing group that are tweeting about the issue. And so hopefully, increase the number of supporters you have and the opportunity to get your word out. So it's an opportunity to do that. And then also from here, you could just click on the link and go to whatever site that was, WNYC's Brian Lehrer Show, and access the information that way. Oops. And this is real time. This is we don't filter this for pro or con census messages. Unfortunately, we can't do that, so you get some crazies here. I don't know if any on here now, but this is real time. So this is 7 hours ago yesterday. As they post, they show up here. And so you get and this goes back, I think, a week's worth of tweets. So you can, use this in kind of a real-time way to monitor who's interested in the census, how to expand your outreach efforts, and improve your campaign to boost participation in the census. So I don't know, anyone have an address or a community they want me to focus on just to get a sense and maybe go through a case study? All right. So we don't have neighborhoods in here, but we all know where that is. So, do you have an address? Street address?
You want a zip code? I mean,
yeah, is it a street address?
13, that's Manhattan, Chinatown.
Yeah. Actually, it is. So, hey, wait a minute. So the tract had a participation rate of 70%. It's not that bad, even though it's considered hard to count. big tracts, 7,500 people, 7,400 people, more than a third of them in poverty, more than two-thirds with low education, again, based on 2000 census characteristics, so... any change since then, it doesn't take into account. By and large, these are good indicators, but you have to obviously take it with a grain of salt. Obviously, primarily Asian Chinese language speaking. The Census Bureau puts a lot of weight in the in so-called complex families, or families where there's no clear householder, not husband and wife families. So more than half of those in this tract are considered that. And that's a concern, again, if you go back here and see the little tip we provide, you know, the householder is the one who fills out the census form. So you have to make sure that you figure out who that is, and it's that person's responsibility to then fill out for the rest of the people in the household. To some extent, crowding is an issue, not so much public assistance or poverty. And no phone service, very small here. I thought the phone, no phone in home characteristics were interesting. I don't know what it's going to look like in the city. Yeah, it was interesting. It's... you know, some areas, 15% or more of that tract in 2000 claimed not to have a phone. Seems high, and maybe that's changed with cell phones now. It's a totally different landscape. But in some parts of the country, I was kind of amazed, pretty high and large concentrations of tracts where, you know, there's no phone in the home. So, but I think even with cell phones, this is a useful indicator because trying to track down those numbers in order to make the calls to get the word out to urge people to participate if they didn't mail the form back is going to be challenging if it's not a landline and you can't tie that phone to that address. So I think this is still a valuable thing to consider when you're planning your outreach campaign. You know, what areas can you feel safe to focus on a phone campaign, or what areas will you need to do a door-to-door outreach effort? And let me point out one other thing, speaking of door-to-door campaigns. So let's say we're looking at Sunset Park. Click on the map option. And you're looking at this map and you want to see what the streets are. Well, you can't turn off the color-shaded tracts, but you can make them transparent, and you could do that dynamically. So you can set it so that you can still see that it's, you know, red shaded tracks, but you can see the streets shining through. So it's a way of using this to actually plan your, you know, street by street, door to door campaign in areas that will need it the most. And groups are using this all across the country. We've gotten feedback from people in, you know, all regions of the nation. You know, that they're incorporating this into their media campaigns, incorporating it into their door-to-door efforts, and probably also in a much tighter integrated way in terms of door-to-door campaigns. We'll be able to hopefully plot back the information about where people have gone, and people will be able to annotate the map, make notes on it. That'll be available to others to see. And I should point out that the other thing that we're going to be doing here, let's see if I don't have the link to the Census Bureau's site, but the Census Bureau is, for the first time, this census, is going to be publishing more or less in real time what the actual participation rates are, track by track, nationwide. And they have a mapping website where they'll be displaying that information, so you can type in your address county, or, you know, zoom to your location and find out how well your area is doing compared to next door or in another state. And we'll be adding that information here as well, so you'll be able to see where we expect the areas to be hard to count and what the actual participation rates are, So you can, organizations who are doing outreach can get a sense of what areas they can continue focusing on or what areas they don't need to worry about anymore because there's already been a high participation rate, and again, get a better bang for their buck, have a more efficient operation to make sure that they really focus on areas that need the outreach and the help the most in terms of boosting the participation rates. So that'll be starting towards the end of the month. And again, as you know, Howard, I'm sure, is going to talk about, April 1 is so-called Census Day. That's when you're supposed to send your forms back. That you should be receiving them, I guess, over the course of the next couple of weeks. But then the real work begins in some ways, because then they get the forms back, and the Census Bureau needs to figure out, all right, where else do they need to go for people who didn't mail their forms back, and go out and find them and reach out to them and make sure that you know, the people that didn't mail it back are actually going to fill it out. So that's, as you can imagine, a huge amount of work. That's where the census enumerators come in, people out going, knocking door to door, and there'll be questionnaire assistance centers and be-counted sites. And that's a huge effort. So I think something like this is going to come in really handy for people all across the country doing that type of work. Any questions? Jack?
Yeah. The principal information for these maps comes from the 2000 census.
That's correct, yes.
From data that the census has already collected, and we know that the data that they've collected has already been flawed because people haven't sent in all their census. So I mean, there's a bit of circular reasoning there that's a bit faulty, but I mean, this is a solid thing to do that. But I'm wondering if there are, at least for New York City, obviously it will differ for every knowing databases, as I know you know that I know, and I know that you know. There are other databases out there, and you mentioned the foreclosure rate, and that there are other databases out there that can be used also to predict certain things, and they'll be newer, and they may be more up to date, and they are kind of more independent of this stuff. I'm not thinking of things like the kinds of buildings that we have here. Uh-huh. There are certain buildings, such as tenements, that might be more linked to low rate of return, and other databases that might indicate certain kinds of things.
Yes.
So I don't know how far you look at that or how far the Department of City Planning has looked at that, but certainly in the New York area, is there room for that kind of analysis?
Yes, I think the City Planning Department has done that extensively. And actually, there was a New York Times article a week or two ago that referenced this map and talked about the effort that the City Planning Department has been doing to locate addresses, in some cases huge, you know, apartment buildings that the Census Bureau missed for whatever reason, but now they know about.
And lofts, all that kind of stuff.
So jokingly, the head of the population division, Joe Salvo, at the end of the article said something to the effect that they, at one point, they considered trying to analyze toilet flushes to try to figure out how many people were actually living in any given building. It wasn't going to work. But there definitely are other databases. The reason we didn't include those here is that they're really hit or miss, depending on what municipality you're looking at. And so since this was nationwide, sure, we were kind of stuck with the lowest common denominator.
Well, one famous one going back to 1980 was subway turnstile fares, yeah, in neighborhoods that were increasing in immigrants. And the subway, they were using the subway, and the population didn't seem to indicate that.
Actually, one thing that we hope to integrate into this is we got contacted by the National Education Association, and they have put together locations of schools, public schools, and they may also do this for private schools, where bilingual education is provided, and that's based on recent data. So we're hoping to add that, so that might also be another barometer of language challenges and or language isolation, as it were, and give a better sense of more recent information about where hard-to-count areas might be. So that's one thing that, on a nationwide basis, we're hoping to add. But yeah, there's a lot of different data sets that, and of course, you know, especially with something like this, lowest common denominator, it's nationwide data, you who know your neighborhoods and know your communities best will, you know, this is just a starting point. You need to obviously incorporate that local knowledge into whatever outreach efforts you're working on. don't take this as faith. You need to go out and you know, incorporate what you know and use this to compare against in order to really get the most effective effort.
Can you just give a few examples of those data sets that you're talking
about? Of what?
The data sets that you're talking about?
Just well, building permits. To some extent, the local municipalities might have relationships with utilities. So they'll know, you know, who's getting power, whether they're an illegal apartment or not. The educational statistics, public school data, things like that. And the Census Bureau, they collect information on building permits, but it's not as in-depth or as comprehensive as it is for municipalities that are collecting it for tax purposes. They really know. So that's a you know much more precise and detailed measure locally.
Is this data set available to the public?
Yes, and I should point out, I hope I don't pull a wire out here. Because the screen is a little small on the laptop, but there are underneath here, where you see where it says print, there are other buttons there that you can click on that give you access to other information, including a link to the spreadsheet that the Census Bureau provides, and they did a terrific job doing this, where you can download the nationwide spreadsheet that has all the information that we use to develop the site. And as you click around on the map, take a second. We give you the ability to download the information for whatever spot you click on. So you could download it as a spreadsheet or any kind of for a text file, so you could do the analysis yourself if you want.
Is this data set useful for understanding the education level of the you know
the people that we want to study, and also like the employment. For instance, like with the housing data here, we don't have the education, you know, the record of education. So can we use the census track, you know, to? Well, we provide the part of the analysis the Census Bureau did was they looked at education characteristics or education levels. So they used high school education as a cutoff. So for people 25 and over in 2000, if they didn't have a high school education, that factored into the analysis of whether it was going to be a hard-to-count area or not. So we have that information. So the people 25 and older with no high school education, tract by tract, county by county, state by state.
There's no higher level. They don't have the data for it, like the grad field.
Well, not here, but again, when you click on the census links tab, you can click here, and that opens up the actual census profile for that tract with the wealth of information that the Census Bureau provides. So you can get detailed data on education statistics, on public assistance, on language spoken, all sorts of age breakdowns. It'll take a second, but so you can access all of that. So even though we don't have it in the map, it's accessible to you. And I should also point out that there are more recent statistics that the Census Bureau has collected from 2006 to 2008 as part of the American Community Survey. They don't have that yet at the tract level. It's at larger statistical units called Public Use Microdata Areas, or PUMAs for short. And so that's about 100,000 people. So in New York City, that's more or less a community board. So for each community board, they have more recent data. What we did here is for each tract, you can click to get information from the 06-08 American Community Survey for the PUMA or community board the tract is in. So you can get a generalized sense for the area that you're looking at, what the more recent characteristics are.
And this is for every 2 years?
This is happening annually. Yeah, the American Community Survey, we can talk about that in more detail if you want, but that's an annual thing. Starting next year, they'll have tract-level data. And here, I don't know if this is how well this is going to work, but eventually you'll see a map of the actual public use microdata area that that tract is in. It'll take a little while. I don't know. The Census Bureau mapping site is a little slow. Oh, and then the last thing is links to other organizations working on these issues. We weren't able to provide localized links here, but gives you a kind of a overall list of the major organizations, civil rights groups, and the like involved in census issues. And from here, you can access, you know, local organizations as well. And there's a group called Nonprofit Counts that's put together a lot of great state-by-state resources, not just for nonprofit organizations. Well, it's kind of scrunched up because of the size of the screen, but you can access that via our mapping site. And if you want to enlist others or find out who else is doing similar work in your area, you can use this. Well, it's available now.
I mean, for the 2010. So after you finish the 2010 census, when will the statistics ready as this?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the Census Bureau, once they get all of the data in, they're going to start publishing the data probably a year or two after that. So 2011 is probably the earliest we're going to start to see the results. How we're going to integrate it into this, I don't know. That's for the future. And we'll see. I mean, we're talking with the Census Bureau itself. We didn't do this with the Census Bureau. We did this on our own with these foundations and organizations. And but the Census Bureau loves it. And it's, you know, I have to say, it's pretty easy to use and a lot easier to use than a lot of their applications. So we're talking with them about how we can use this as a platform for them to publish information, you know, moving ahead. So we'll see. We don't know yet. But we definitely want to keep it going and do that. So, okay. Let me turn it over to Howard. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve, for your presentation. I'm going to talk about our community engagement campaign, and then at the end I'll talk a little bit about how we use data, like data resources like Steve's site. We are engaged, let me start off with a few statistics because I think that was promised. The Asian American community in New York City is the fastest growing ethnic group, although from a really small base, that's why. So if you look at the growth rates, it's higher than even the Hispanic population in New York City. In 2000, it was about 10% of the New York City population. Recent estimates show it's getting close to 13, 14, and maybe even 15%. And we will see with those Census 2010 results how big of an increase we actually get. Within the community, almost three quarters were born in a foreign country, so they were immigrants. And depending on the ethnic group, language, English proficiency is also an issue within the community. So let me sort of hit some of the basics. I think some of you already know what the census is about, but the decennial census is done every 10 years, and it's a count of all of the residents in the United States without regard to immigration status. And it's mandated by the Constitution. Everyone must participate. And the primary purpose, of course, is to reapportion the states, the number of seats in the House of Representatives to each state. And actually, the first data that's supposed to come out is December 31st, 2010, with the actual population count in each state. So, and that's reported to the president, and he provides it to Congress. And then after that, there's data releases happening in early 2011 that will help with redistricting efforts within the states. But aside from those direct uses of the data, the Census Bureau data also is used to allocate about $400 billion annually of federal funding. This has actually grown since the last time. Originally, the Bureau was saying $300 billion. Now it's $400 billion with all the stimulus funding that's coming along and also the increase in federal aid in general. And also, we as advocates in the community need the data to do our jobs, to push for policy changes, to look for more fair and equitable distribution of resources to our communities. And so what we've been telling all of our partners is that our outreach efforts for Census 2010 are an investment for the next 10 years. One of the key differences between 2000 and 2010, Steve mentioned it, there's this American Community Survey that's going out now. What the American Community Survey is a replacement for the long-form questionnaire that was part of the Census 2000 process, where one in six households received this long-form questionnaire that asked all of the important questions that I use in my work, like income, employment, housing, and other questions like that. So there's no long form in 2010. All that data is now collected annually in the American Community Survey. The survey goes out to about 250,000 households a month, and then at the end of each year, the Bureau accumulates all the data and publishes the results. The census form, as a consequence, the census form is one of the simplest forms to fill out in decades. It's basically 10 questions for one individual, and then there's an additional question in the red square box over here that talks about of the relationship to the householder, which is the first person that fills out the form. So it's really, it doesn't ask about immigration status. It doesn't ask about any personal identification numbers. So I think this time around, we really have a good shot at getting a lot more people who are concerned about confidentiality to fill out the form. The census timeline, basically, these are some key milestones. You've seen all of the ads that are emerging that started off in January. Actually, in February, the toll-free lines opened. The questionnaire assistance centers got pushed back to March. And then the advertising right around now is shifting its focus to motivating people to mail back their forms. March 8th is when an advance letter goes out to tell people to look for the forms. March 15th are when the forms are mailed out. And then March 18th, a reminder to fill out your form. And also some postcards will have language assistance information on them, will be mailed out. Steve mentioned earlier, April 1st is when the census forms are due. The Bureau then starts to plan how they're going to send out their enumerators in early April. May and through July is when they go door to door to get the people that did not mail back their forms to fill out to get their information. And then there's some shifts in advertising focus. And then I mentioned in December, the Bureau is mandated to report the state population totals to the president. The Bureau is actually spending a lot of money to do outreach through paid media. I'm sure you've seen the ads that are out there. There's Super Bowl ads in the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. But they also had a subcontractor that specifically targeted Asian Americans. And the languages covered are listed here. They're in print, TV, radio, out of home, so like subway ads and billboards and things like that. And interactive media, so banner ads and certain websites. And not all of the languages have all of these media outlets. They were not able to identify for certain languages, for example, a national television network to advertise on. So there's some gaps in coverage where our campaign is going to try to fill. So the Federation is broadly reaching out to Asian communities in these four specific areas, New York State, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Philadelphia. We're working with national partners to cover the rest of the country, and I'll go into that a little bit later. But we also wanted to target particular neighborhoods within this region, so places like Flushing, Jackson Heights. And we want to work with our community partners, which I'll also talk about a little bit. And we also want to pay special attention to those hard-to-count factors. So I think Steve mentioned housing units with multiple families living in them, people who are domestic workers who live in one place but actually commute weekly to another place and may even live there during the week. Those people are not going to be home for the census enumerator when they come knocking on their doors to respond to those questions. Seniors who live alone are naturally going to be cautious about opening the door for anyone that they're not familiar with. New immigrants with limited English skills who are not familiar with the census process and what the census is for, and also associate the census with the census that's done in their original home country. So there's a lot of not only process issues, but also fear of government issues. And then undocumented immigrants in general, with their fear, their concerns about confidentiality and immigration enforcement. So our approach is two-pronged. We have a community outreach a strategy where we are working extensively with our community partners to do different things, things like providing a local telephone hotline with language support to different ethnic groups. So some of the languages that we're supporting are here. We've added some other ones on this list. I can provide that to you if you're interested. Some of our partners are doing neighborhood canvassing. So data like from Steve's website is important in helping them target their activities. Direct assistance. So we want to do either assistance forums on one particular day for the community to come to, or offer support within our partner CBOs who provide services throughout the decade. But they also can supplement that with helping people fill out their census forms.
Do you mean that the census form only in one language, in English?
It will be mailed out in English, except for certain places where they'll get a bilingual Spanish and English form. If you want a form in Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Russian, and Spanish, you can request one by calling a telephone hotline. But that leaves like all of these other languages. But there are 59 other languages that they provide language assistance guides to help you fill out the English form, and you mail back the English form. So there's a lot of help out there. And so
basically, the form is in English. So those are the guidelines for people who speak in another language.
Yeah, to fill out the English, yeah. And then we will have they will have official questionnaire assistance centers where people can go in and talk to a Census Bureau staff person who's sworn to protect the confidentiality of their information to help them fill out their forms. And the Bureau is working with all of our community partners to make sure that the languages that are needed in those questionnaire assistance centers in the neighborhoods, you know, reflects the neighborhoods that they're situated in.
Mm-hmm.
A federal law called Title 13 that governs the practices of the Census Bureau. Within that law, there is a provision that says any Census Bureau worker who has sworn to protect data, if they are found to not be protecting the data, they can be fined. I think it's about $250,000 and receive a 5-year prison sentence. I think so. So those protections are in place. But also external to that, there are a lot of civil rights groups in New York City. ALDEF, Asian American Legal Defense Fund, has a census monitoring program. So they have a hotline where people can report any concerns and issues, and they can take certain legal actions if necessary. But I think in general, there's pretty strong provisions in the existing law to keep people from violating confidentiality. No, there is no question on the form about immigration status. There's no question about Social Security numbers or A numbers or anything else like that. They ask for demographic data, and they ask for address, and they ask for a telephone number in case they have questions about how you answer the form, especially in those complex family household situations where they want to make sure that they get the count right. I guess getting back to our community outreach strategy, we were also we're looking to have our partners organize community events, and then we have one partner called Apex who's organizing a poster contest for K-12 students to create a poster that expresses the importance of the census to their community, and there's a cash prize involved in that. These are our New York City grantees. We are also working on a list of grantees in New Jersey and Philadelphia, and a couple of potential grantees in Connecticut. So this covers a broad range of ethnic groups across New York City. And aside from working with our community partners, we're also looking to hire specific specialists to reach out to smaller ethnic communities that may not have a CBO that services them. So groups like Thai or Bhutanese or other organizations, or not organizations, other emerging Asian ethnic communities in New York City. And we're also looking to hire some people to help us do outreach upstate, particularly in the larger metro areas that have substantial and growing Asian communities. And then we are also working with national partners to plan events around a National Week of Action, which is the week before April 1st. Our second prong is a media campaign. We are starting on March 8th, placing in-language ads on buses in Queens, Brooklyn, Albany and Syracuse, and selected subway station ads across the city, primarily in Queens, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. We actually have a couple stops in the Bronx as well. And then we're also targeting these commuter vans that service the in intercity coaches that service the Chinatowns in New York City area, because there's a lot of people that, again, the domestic workers and restaurant workers who often are based in New York City but go and work across the Northeast for months on end and then coming back to New York to rest and recuperate. The languages that are covered in the ads are the following listed here. There's South Asian ads, there's East Asian ads, there's Southeast Asian ads. And we were coordinating with our fellow New York State grantees, the Asian Americans for Equality, New York Immigration Coalition, the New York Community Media Alliance on media buys. So we basically stepped back and emphasized transit ads, and we were looking at a couple of radio and TV outlets as well. And then these organizations will cover print media in their ad campaign. We're also working with ALDEF as a national partner. They're doing census monitoring and legal support and some community education around legal issues, as well as advocacy to the Census Bureau to get them to hire additional partnership specialists in certain areas across the country and other issues like that. And we're also part of a national Asian American and Pacific Islander Census 2010 campaign, where we are re-granting to grassroots organizations across the country. The main partners are listed here: Asian American Justice Center, Asian American Institute in Chicago, Asian Pacific American Legal Center in Los Angeles, and the Asia Pacific Fund in San Francisco. And one of the results of this campaign is the National Resource Center. It's called fillinourfuture.org, and it has a lot of we're using it as a place to share all the translated materials that all the local organizations and national organizations have created. So there are presentations, PSAs, brochures, ads, census outreach toolkits, and we also wanted to share best practices and also events. So anytime somebody is holding some event or centered around census, that we know about it and we can support them in any way we can. So now, coming back to the original topic of this presentation, what we are doing in our campaign is using data resources like the Census Hard to Count Maps website to identify Asian neighborhoods with the potential for low or non-response. And so what we want to do is combine the data that's out there with the local knowledge that our partners and we have of the community and enable targeted messaging and strategies to gauge Asians. So what do I mean by that? We want to, for example, the Census Bureau, all of this data is available on the Census website, but their website has a mapping function that does not tell you what the street addresses are around a census tract. What Steve's website allows us to do is to figure out physically what a census tract is located, where it's located, and be able to send people out for canvassing to do targeted outreach to people. And similarly, for the transit ads, we can identify subway stations, bus lines that we wanted to target. That way we don't have to blanket the entire city with ads. And we can also specifically target ads in a particular language group on particular subways, stations, or on particular bus lines. We also use the data to help advocate for the opening location of questionnaire assistance centers and B-counted sites. Obviously, we want them to be located close to where people are living or even where they're working. We also would want to be able to track, Steve mentioned before, the real-time mailback participation rates so that we know come April 1st, post-April 1st, we know which neighborhoods we are in trouble, so then we can bring additional resources like community events, canvassing, community tabling, and other resources to target those particular locations. And then we also use the data to identify gaps in outreach coverage. This is more a step back. If we want to look at New Jersey, do we have when we were doing our New Jersey grants, we were looking at how many organizations applied? Do we have particular ethnic groups in New Jersey that are not responding to our RFP? Then we actively go out and try to seek organizations to join our effort because we want to make sure that everybody's covered. So, and then my final slide is census for the Federation is not a once every 10 years effort. We want to continue our engagement with the Census Bureau. So we'll be looking at the effectiveness and the lessons learned in our 2010 campaign because the Census Bureau is already planning census for Census 2020. This is where we want to engage the Census Bureau if we want to make changes in the census form to enable a better description of our communities. We also want to use the momentum from the Census 2010 to increase awareness about the American Community Survey among Asians. The Decennial Census has this incredible outreach program that lets everybody know that the census is coming. The American Community Survey does not have a program like that. And arguably, for my work and for the work of the community advocates, the American Community Survey is more important than even the Decennial Census. It tells us about employment, about language, about all that other stuff that we use to advocate for additional resources to help our communities. And then we will continue our work with the Census Information Center. We want to continue being a resource to the community on how to analyze census and use census data. We'll be updating our briefs. We'll be issuing a series of reports centered around particular topics like children, poverty, and seniors. So that's my presentation. Any questions? Oops. Sure.
I want to say something. Maybe find out. You guys really spend a lot of effort, and you were in this area.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I have a feeling that you're punching the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
What's the motivation for them to give back their
right.
data, especially the immigrant? I come to this country, I just want to grab my money and run.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? I'm sorry. What do I care about? You know, why should I give you my identity? Kids,
they're afraid
you rat them out. I didn't touch
on the messaging. So
yeah, that is one reason. There's no motivation for them mm-hmm. to give you any data. Why should they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't go into our.
They don't plan to help your government to get some statistics on them.
And I think I didn't have time to go into our messaging
right.
for the particular communities.
The other thing is our outreach. Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you,
you might as well go to a restaurant or some mm-hmm. workplace rather than a residential area
mm-hmm.
to find where
right.
they are and how many
right.
people. Or maybe you can make it suggestion to the owner of the business, say, for your own benefit, you might as well provide how many people or what kind of, you know, you don't have to to tell, ask them to give you, like a mandate to provide you some personal data. Mm-hmm. You just say, give me a rough, like, headcount, how many people in your
I think there's the bureau, we have to give the data in the form that the bureau is collecting it in. So we would have. We did in 2000. I wasn't doing census in 2000, but before our organization did, and we worked with ALDEF to actually go into restaurants where actually people are staying rather than they live in. Some of them were living in restaurants, so we went there to get them to fill out the forms because it's important. Yeah. And I didn't go into messaging, but we want to target the messaging for particular groups. So for the new immigrants who don't want to be staying around here, our message to them is that it helps them with transportation, it helps them with educational resources, helps them with hospitals. If a hospital does not know that they're serving Chinese in the community, they're not going to have people that are translators on staff to help them with their issues. So these are tangible things that we want to include in the messaging.
The other thing is, even though they're reluctant to cooperate, but you can ask their children.
Right.
If they, most working people, they probably a couple working in a restaurant, the husband working in New Jersey, wife in the home care somewhere in Long Island.
Right.
So they're not home. But at least their kids, their residents,
There is a census in schools program where the schools are getting information to the kids and hopefully leveraging that to get to the parents. We also have our poster contest. We had that in 2000 as well, and we found that was really effective because parents are not only engages the kids, but parents become proud because their kids are participating in something and they created this something wonderful, and then they get the message that way. So it's all multi-pronged. We're all very tailored towards, and we're giving our partners a lot of freedom in developing the messages. We provide them training and tell them these are the different strategies that have worked in the past, but you have to tell us or you have to pick the right ones for your community.
I know the presentation is mostly about going forward and going to 2010 census, but where can I find information specific of Asians in New York City, the most up-to-date one, not 2000, not from the 2000 census?
You can contact me. I can give you. We're a census information center, so we're officially designated by the Bureau as a data dissemination is their term, but I have that kind of data. I think Steve probably has that data as well. But you can talk to me about
it. Funders with information from 2000.
Right.
It's not up to date, and it's very overwhelming to try to.
Yeah. So the Census Bureau website is easier to use it than in the past, but it's still a learning curve. So I can help you with that. I'll go across the room, so I'll start. Okay. Let's start.
I want to get back to that 2000 to 2010 difference, particularly in rental neighborhoods where most people rent. It's amazing how fast a neighborhood can change from one ethnic group to another ethnic group. It's here. In my own neighborhood, which is a predominantly Asian neighborhood, it's called Pleasure. And, based on the targeting, there are a lot of Hispanics moving into Flushing, too. You may be targeting a place where you think there are Asians. You've got a lot of Hispanics. And the Hispanics may be targeting that same area, and maybe there's a lot of overlapping effort by different ethnic groups trying to collect their ethnic group, and they're really kind of competing and not cooperating.
Right.
Then within the Asian community, there are areas that are primarily Korean, and then there are areas nearby which are primarily Chinese, and they may be competing, or not necessarily competing, but the resources may be displaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you know this yet, because you don't have the data yet.
Yeah, right.
When the data starts coming in, you'll start seeing where the patterns may have started changing from 2000.
But at that micro level, yeah, you have to rely on local knowledge. You just have to.
Right, but what I'm saying is that in the beginning, I don't know, are you set for that? Are you ready for that level of...
Yes.
I guess, almost wasted effort.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be overlap. What the Federation's role is to try to get the Asian groups talking together, and then we're working with the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, who has connections with other ethnic groups within the city. So we're working with them to try to coordinate events as well. But there's going to be necessarily, you know, I wouldn't say wasted effort, but mutual reinforcement. That's what I would call it.
Which is fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But actually, the interesting thing was when I looked at that map, if you asked me what that map showed, I said it's Hispanic population. That's what I saw on the map that you kept showing. That's a Hispanic map to me. And there's a lot of Asians, but that showed me Hispanic.
Like the general outlines of the city. Yeah, yeah.
In the past 10 years, you probably didn't notice that. I live in Jackson Heights, mm-hmm. right around the Indian, Pakistan, mm-hmm. Bangalore neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But in maybe 20, 15 years ago, we think Jackson Heights more Asian, I mean more Korean or mm-hmm. Chinese or something. But nowadays, today, it's become a New Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
So things change, demographic change.
Yeah, and we're relying on, you know, one of our primary South Asian partners is based in Jackson Heights. So, you know,
and Helmer.
So relying on sort of where our partners are locating, they have to locate where the people that they're serving are located. So we're sort of relying on that natural local knowledge. So it's... Not yet, but it will be widely published. Actually,
on the website.
Census website has a link to the 2000 mailback participation rates, but the live stuff hasn't come up yet, and I don't know if that's going to be the same conduit for the information.
That'll be later in March.
Yeah,
they'll have that.
Well, later in April.
Third, fourth week in March.
It'll be in April, I guess. When the data really comes out, it'll be after April 1st.
Well, I just wanted to say, as a representative of the Census Bureau, partnership specialist, we've actually had people from the neighborhoods of Howard. I've had about 100 partnership specialists like myself covering New York and New Jersey, working with the organizations. It's really, we're relying on our partners who know the neighborhood to give us a real accurate and close to accurate picture of the neighborhood. And you're right, neighborhoods can change very fast. And so that we collect now could change in 5 years. The American Community Survey, as you said, is probably even more important because that's the survey that's taken every month by the Census Bureau. So I think then there are, our efforts, by the census to targeting certain hard-to-count populations, mm-hmm. Language, media, advertising, and stuff.
Any other questions?